Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Monday evenings, U.S. Eastern Time, as we explore homeopathy and facial analysis, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooke and Grant Bentley, homeopath and naturopath. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brooke, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our regular co-host, Grant Bentley, Australian naturopath and homeopath, specializing in the facial analysis method. Today is February 20th, 2012. Whether you are new to homeopathy or continuing your lifelong study, you need to be listening to this show because we have really excellent information, innovation, and an addition to your healing toolbox through the facial analysis method. Let others know about the show so everyone can join us by tweeting on Twitter, sending an email, messaging on Facebook, sharing this informational show with others. And also, please send in your questions before the show so we can address them, or come on live chat right now to comment and ask your questions. So we are going to continue on with the presentation we've been talking about for the last 2 or 3 weeks, that homeopathy is both an art and a science, and that the FHFA, facial analysis method, is really great for using an unprejudiced mode of observation of the facial structure and observing life themes and observing generals in the case. And probably only homeopaths know what I'm talking about, but you'll get the hang of it if you just sit down and listen. Okay. Grant, I think you can hear me, so we're ready to go today.
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I do hear you fine, calling in from Australia.
Okay, well, look, Debbie, I just thought that I'd spend the half hour just again when last week we were, well, for the last 2 weeks we've been talking a little bit about the patterns that we see in homeopathy, and I guess that's essentially, as practitioners, what it is that we're trying to focus on. We're trying to, or at least via Bonninghausen, what he was saying was he said, see beyond the simple particulars of the patient's aches and ailments and pains, to see the general thread that is running through. You know, in this world, I mean, there's a lot of different theories and spiritualities and religions, and there's a lot of people discussing who God is, but that I don't know anything about. But what I do know is that God is pretty economical, and we know this because not only science teaches this, but homeopathy teaches this as well. And what I mean by life or nature or God being economical is that the same patterns have a continuum. So they are used constantly over and over again. In nature, you see the river systems, for example, if a photograph is taken from above, replicating our own circulatory system. And there are so many different patterns that we see reproducing themselves that science calls them either a Mandelbrot or a fractal patterning. But what we're doing with the generals is that we are doing exactly the same thing as that. We are trying to see the pattern by taking an above-looking-down perspective. We're not trying to get so deep and so involved in any singular symptom that we become immersed into it. And I guess this is where the HFA system is a little contrary to this kind of almost post-Freudian system of going deeper and deeper into the mental. What we're trying to do is that we're trying to to take a bird's eye view. We're taking taking a step back and seeing the similarity, the pattern. After all, it is the law of similar. We're trying to see the similarity in the case that the patient is presenting to us in our clinic. And so what we can pretty much state is that the whole job of the homeopath, the whole job of homeopathy, is to find these patterns in pathology. And this is where it's a natural medicine. We often find that homeopathy, and the least of the homeopath, is so far ahead it just sometimes takes science a little time to catch up. And I guess with what we're seeing with this new idea, this new concept of fractal patterns or Mendelbrot, that we see that same catch-up to what homeopaths have already been talking about 200 years earlier. Hardiman talked about it, certainly Donninghausen talks about it. It's about seeing that red thread that runs all the way through the different particulars. So from a bird's eye perspective, we can see the links that are joining these pathologies together. When we do see that link that is joining the pathologies together, then that link becomes more important than the pathology itself, because as we know, the chain is only as strong as its weakest link, and it's the link that we're trying to find. It's the link that our remedies are working on. So what we're doing is that we are trying to turn this series of particulars into generals, because generals are the most important rubrics that homeopaths can have at their disposal. They are telling them the case. Now, last week we touched a little bit on both the mentals and the generals, and just exactly what generals in a physical pathology were. And I just want to just, you know, I'm not going to go into it again, but I'd just like to give a few examples of how we make a physical general out of the different pathologies that we can see. So, for example, if we had somebody coming to see us and, you know, a year ago they were in hospital with appendicitis and they are also coming to see us for the major complaint of arthritis, but at the same time they're a little run down and they've got tonsillitis, then it's fairly easy to say that this itis is all the way through our patient as they're sitting in front of us. So turning itis into repertory speak, we would then go to the general section, because this is where we're linking them. We're not necessarily taking every bit of inflammation that we find. We're not going to the tonsils and putting it in, we're then going to the appendix and putting that in, and then joints and putting inflammation in. That is getting immersed into the particulars. All we need to do is find that same fractal patterning. The only thing that unites in this case the tonsils with the appendix with the joints is the inflammation. Take away the inflammation and you don't have a sickness in any one of those three areas. So what we're looking at now is that the inflammation from the generals becomes our major general. Then what we have is that we can also do this with particulars that are to do with sides. Or, like somebody's saying here, you can do it with locations. So I'll run through a few. So there's no need to write in and sort of say, well, okay, well, what about this, what about that? You'll get the hang of it, because what we're looking at here is that if somebody had right-sided migraines or a tendency to, and then their right-sided knee pain, and then again we'll take the appendix, which is the right side, then we can see that right-sidedness come through. So the sides generally don't mean, look, they're not as elusive. Most homeopaths are trained to understand that the sides are really, they're more observable. what we don't get trained in so much, and I suppose this is where pathology comes in handy, but it's only really handy in the sense of linking it together. It's, if we see somebody with varicose veins and they're also coming to see us for eye problems like glaucoma and they're also having problems with the kidneys, then the one major physical pathology or at least system that it links those three areas together is the circulatory system. And so what I would do then is that I wouldn't necessarily add in those three particulars, the same as what I was talking about with the inflammation. What I'll do is that I will go to the problems of the circulation, and now I would have my second general. Like you were saying, sides are also important, but also, too, look for the times of day, not just as single modalities, but look for other for times and conditions that affect a number of areas because they become important. If, for example, I mean, I'm just making this off the top of my head, but if, for example, somebody is coming to you because their sleep is very light and restless, and often what will happen is that they'll go to bed feeling okay, but because of their poor sleep or whatever, however they justify it, they might wake up with a headache and, look, we're talking about joints, so let's just say their joints are there, will sometimes start aching while they're in bed and wake them up. What we have there is that we do have a general, and that general in those three particular things are that they are worse during sleep. The question becomes, why don't we just add everything in? And the answer is because we need to be selective with our repertorization. Our repertorization becomes ineffectual if we are not going to discriminate what rubrics are placed into our repertorization. Our repertorization is meant to be a hierarchy of importance of the pathologies that the homeopath has deemed that to be in that order. The rest of the things, the rest of what we're leaving out of the repertorization, we are expecting, once we give the right remedy, to have that remedy to have a flow-on effect and deal with those anyway. But at this time, if we can fix up, let's just say, the sleep, the circulation, and the inflammation, then all of the other things that are attributed to that should fall into line naturally anyway. And that's why what we do in a repertorization is that a repertorization is about reproducing in repertory speak what is most important to least important. Now, that's why we don't want to be putting in every single rubric that we can think of or that the case may have. Because what we're saying, if somebody comes in and says right now, so we've got three rubrics, right? We've got our inflammation, circulation, and we've got our worst during sleep. And I'll tell you what we'll do, we'll even chuck in the sides as well. So we've got our four rubrics. Now, if someone turns around and says, oh, look, also, by the way, I occasionally get spots on my nails, just thought I'd throw it in. So if we now put in spots on the nails, what we're saying in that repertorization, because remember the program doesn't differentiate, that's meant to be our job. So what we're saying is that the spots on the nails is every bit as important as a rubric as the other four that it is part of. Now, clearly, that is not the case. And that's why I've always said to my students, well, look, I've been doing this for 20 years now, and I've been saying it every year, and I'm going back to doing a little bit of teaching again, and I will be saying exactly the same thing. If you can't repertorize, you can't practice. Everything comes down to this. This is what's so important. So you don't throw in every single symptom willy-nilly. You need to be able to differentiate and place into a hierarchy of importance. What we also need to do is that we need to understand how disease works. Now, remember, in this HFA model that I've developed, what we have is that there are two types of disease. It's not just about acute and chronic anymore. There is a subclass of the chronic, and there are two types. With both, there is infectious, and then there is non-infectious. Now, with a non-infectious disease, whether or not that disease is acute or chronic, meaning that that infection could be something like measles, but it could also be something like tuberculosis. So one is, and it's, the chronicity is based on the nature and our interaction, but the nature of the bacteria or virus, and whether we can eradicate it or can't eradicate it, and so on. And so there we can see where the similimum, with its repelling action, like two magnets, one repelling the other from the body, will work. However, there are a vast number of complaints, like arthritis, like migraines, often depression, and so on, that cannot be directly linked to an infection. And we know that it has a lot to do with personal energy levels, because the patient will say, when are you, say, well, when are your moods, or when are your depression, or when are your migraines at their worst? And what they will answer is always the same. I think I've noticed that my migraines, my depression, add in whatever non-infectious pathology you want to put in, is at its worst when I'm really stressed or when I'm tired. That's when they seem to really come back in full force. In fact, that's when they make me remember that I'm going to have to take better care of myself. That's when I know that I'm tired. So even there, we see these two generals running through. And when that person can restore their energy, either with our help and sometimes without it, then their migraines or whatever they are potentially liable to fall back into, whatever pattern, becomes ameliorated, providing that they look after themselves. Even with a remedy, they will often find that that will be able to get them back up on their feet, and instead of having a migraine once a week, they might find that they haven't had a migraine for 8 months, but now their migraines are starting to return a little bit, and on questioning we find that they've got a new job, or they've just gone through a marital breakup, or whatever it may be. But you can see the energetic cause and effect. And so now we just adjust our treatment plan accordingly. So again, what you see is that you see these same similar patterns, and that's what we have got to become accustomed to reading. Now, last week we spoke a little bit about the spotting these patterns in the mental. Now, by the mental, it doesn't necessarily mean a thought process or an emotion. It can be in a circumstance, or it can be an event. It's just that circumstances and events are usually found in the mental section. So, for example, I just recently was, in fact, my last patient that I was treating was in a state where there was a lot of arthritis, which is probably why it's in my mind, but they were being bullied verbally, both outside and inside the home. So what I will do there is that, because I can see that that bullying is suppressing this person's nature, and there is this flow-on effect because there is a lack of freedom in their own expression, and that lack of freedom is expressing itself physically in the joints not being able to move, then what we see here is that I need to include the cause. And the cause, and remember, you've got to put everything back into repertory speak, and there is no bullying. So what I need to do is understand the nature of the bullying. Is it putting them down? Is it being physical? What is it? Now, in this particular case, it was somebody being very critical of them, both outside the home in their workplace and then inside the home with their partner. and they were putting them down, both boss and partner, were telling them their fault constantly. And so what we have now is that this person is becoming quite literally arthritic in their social capabilities. They are becoming stuck. And so what I do then is that I will put the rubric censorious, which is critical, into the repertorization. Now, of course, we are being trained to understand that censorious is meant to represent the patient themselves. But, of course, with HFA, we're not doing it that way. We're doing it that we're trying to encapsulate an energy of the cause and effect of this person's pathology. So censorious, this putting people down and being overly critical, doesn't have to come from being a part of the patient's character, but it can be something that's inflicted upon them. And it works much better if you do it this way. And so censorious would become my mental rubric. If I found, however, that the patient was being physically bullied, being physically punched around or abused, then that would change my rubric from the censorious into violence, because that has to represent what's going on. So what we see, I always think that we've got to remember Newton. Newton is, as we know, not just one of the major lights of science, but because Newton dealt with motion and force, and that's all homeopathy is, then Newton's laws are just as applicable to homeopathic practice as they are getting a rocket to the moon. So what we see is that in our repertorization, and I'll get to that in a minute, why Newton's important, but what we see in our repertorization is that we want the generals of the case, and because those physical generals of the case represent the action, I mean, represent the reaction. The mentals, particularly when you're dealing with events or circumstances, like the violent bullying or the censorious bullying, they are the action or the cause. And that's Newton's third law of motion. All these laws of motion apply to energy because that's all energy is. And seeing no homeopathy is nothing but energy, then Newton's laws are very important. So the third law of motion is that to every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. So what I understand is that in my repertorization, I have both action and reaction in it. That, in Hahnemannian terms, is totality, and that is the basis of finding the simillimum. If you don't have the simillimum, then I'm not talking about just my impression of what that the patient sitting in front of me, what type of person they are. That's not totality. Totality is the sum total of the cause of the problem and the effect of the problem. And this is where the mentals and the generals, particularly if their circumstances, become vital. Because what we see in the physical generals is the body's attempt at stabilizing and rebalancing what the cause has thrown out in the first place. So the body is trying to balance itself out, and by doubling up on the effort of the body's rebalancing, this is how homeopathy works. And there is a second way. The way that it rebalances is not necessarily by actually going in there and trying to move bits around. All it's doing is supplying energy to a body that is being drained by, in this case, constant criticism. So homeopathic remedies work in two ways. If you look, it all depends on whether or not you are willing to adopt the philosophy of a non-infectious chronic disease. If you're not willing to do that, and everything comes back into a prior infection, then we probably don't have anything to talk about. But if you are willing to understand that patients are coming back saying, look, that remedy was wonderful, but, you know, look, it's just starting to return, so I thought I'd better see you again. And then you say, okay, so how come it's just starting to return now? What's been going on in your life? And they turn around and say, oh, look, I've just gone through a messy divorce, or a mother just died, or I've just got a promotion, but they're demanding so much. Then we begin to make sense of what our patients have been telling us or have been telling me for the last 20 years. And instead of trying to fit it into a model that is terribly difficult to fit it into, it's just about seeing homeopathy as being more extensive than what we previously thought. So it doesn't actually take away anything from Hahnemann or homeopathy, but in fact makes homeopathy seem more encompassing once we understand that there is an energetic cause to chronic disease, not just an infectious cause to chronic disease. This has also been why a lot of the times I have gone into more repeated doses. Now, whether you want to do that by centesimals or LM, I'm not prepared to go into the whole, but Hahnemann said you shouldn't repeat centesimals debate, because Hahnemann was never talking about an energy disturbance via stress or exhaustion. He was only and ever talking about infection. So this is one of the problems, and particularly, and look, this pattern is also what we're trying to see in the face. We're trying to see what features belonging to what miasm are coming through most dominantly. And what's really interesting about HFA, what's really interesting about homeopathy from my perspective, and this is not going to be anyone else's perspective because they're not necessarily trying to get people to have a look at something new. But what is interesting from my perspective is that homeopaths have spent a lot of time on skeptics and how skeptics don't even look at what we do, not the results. What they're doing is that skeptics are applying what is counterintuition, meaning that homeopathy, it's not the fact that it doesn't work, it's just the fact that it shouldn't work. It's counterintuitive to the logic that we understand. But in a lot of ways, what I've seen is homeopaths themselves do exactly that same counterintuitive skepticism towards facial analysis as what they level at the skeptics themselves. So it's kind of an interesting paradigm where I'm in, and I'm kind of just balancing it out. But for me, what is the most interesting is the success rates of patients, and that's how I know that what I'm doing is accurate, that the facial analysis does represent the underlying miasm, and also true that the way that I view non-infectious disease and have switched a little from the object of cure into the object of case management, or at least energy management, has produced for me a much better and healthier relationship with my patients, and my patients being much more appreciative, understanding, and happier with the treatment that I provide. So that is all where patterning comes into. Understand the patterns give us the understanding of what it is that we're trying to achieve and how to do it. Hopefully there are some questions at least that you want to ask Debbie or whatever. I've taken nearly the full half hour just as it is. So what I'll do is I'll stop at this point if you want to ask anything.
Well, I thought that it was excellent presentation. I was listening with both ears, and my imagination had a picture of the Grand Canyon and how it got created through the constant movement of water through this landmass, and how the body itself could show its stresses upon itself over time, and how we naturally do see our parents or grandparents or other relatives in ourselves, and how we even grow into those images that we see, those pictures, probably due to the life stresses, and that if we have less stresses or are better able to cope, we look maybe more fresh or younger, or don't the grooves in our face don't get in so deeply. That was just something in my imagination as you were talking at the end there.
No, I can see the analogy in that.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I can see the analogy in that. I think that that's a reasonable analogy. That's painting a reasonable picture.
Okay. And we want to let the folks who are listening in today know that this is a regularly scheduled show on Monday at 8 p.m. with Grant Bentley, talking about the homeopathy facial analysis method, and that you can go to his website, www.vcch.org, to learn more, to listen to many more of these podcasts and other tools and a wealth of information that he has over there. We're very much appreciative to the fact that he does come online and give us this information of his years of experience and knowledge about homeopathy and how to really get closer to a similimum using these pattern observations in the generals and the patterns. Also, we would like to also invite you to listen to our other shows on Wednesday morning. Dr. Adil Chimthalawala Kasim talks about heart health, and he's going to be talking about pregnancy and your heart. We're having a special guest following him at noon on Wednesday with Dr. Rajni Sharma talking about love and homeopathy. To me, Grant, I think love is probably at the heart of all of life, so you could probably talk about that forever. And on Thursday, we have Alan Phillips talking about vaccinations and our rights, because this is also another stress upon our bodies, upon our immune systems, and it's being abused and overused today by the medical system. Too many requirements for that. And finally, we have Dr. Christina Chambreau at 1 o'clock, a homeopathic veterinarian, talking about pet health. And we've been talking recently about post-traumatic stress disorder for military dogs. So not only do humans have great stresses upon their system, but animals, both domesticated and wildlife today, have great stresses that our homeopathic remedies can help with. So next week, what do you plan to talk about?
Look, I'll probably just continue on from there. Look, if anyone wants to talk about a particular topic also too, they can feel free to ask and I'll try and prepare something for it.
Yes, I love it when people have questions. We want as much participation and interaction. I know that we've had hundreds of listeners to each of our shows. If not live, I know on the download. So don't forget to listen to the past shows, the archives, tweet, put it on your Facebook, share it on your emails, and all the great things that you have the opportunity to be part of creating waves of awareness. And okay, so it's probably time for everybody to take it easy now, and we're going to close today's show with our sign-out music, and we'll see you the next week, okay? Bye-bye.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Monday evening, U.S. Eastern Time, as we explore homeopathy and facial analysis, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooks, and Grant Bentley, homeopath and naturopath. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go! Thank you for listening to Homeopathy and Facial Analysis on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brooks and Grant Bentley. We encourage you to follow our show. Click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air. Share with friends on Facebook and MySpace, and also Twitter. We welcome your comments and questions. See you next time.